ice in the glass is exactly 1 inch across. It is a perfect cube, clear enough to see the condensation trails on the far side of the crystal. He reaches across the mahogany desk and slides the coaster 2 inches to the left. The sound is a dry scrape, like a fingernail on a chalkboard. He doesn't say a word. He just looks at the digital clock on the wall. The red numbers flip from 11:59 to 12 o'clock. The air in the office is 68 degrees. It is precise. It is controlled. He takes a sip of the water and places the glass back down, aligning the edge of the cube with the grain of the wood. The light from the street lamp outside hits the gold signet ring on his right hand. It leaves a small, distorted yellow reflection on the surface of my phone. The phone is face down. It has been face down for 42 minutes. The weight of the tablet in my lap is 2 pounds. The screen is dark, but the glass is warm from the heat of my palms. There is a single smudge on the bottom right corner of the tablet, right where the authorize button usually appears. I track that smudge. It is a dull grey blur against the black glass. He stands up. He is 6 feet tall. His suit is charcoal, tailored so tightly that there are no wrinkles when he moves. He walks to the window and pulls the heavy velvet curtain shut. The room becomes darker, the only light coming from the desk lamp and the red glow of the clock. He places a hand on the back of my chair. I can feel the heat from his palm through the silk of my blouse, but his hand does not move. It is a steady rhythmic pressure. He leans down, his breath smelling like peppermint and nothing else. He points at the tablet. He tells me that the transfer protocol is ready. He says the foundation's account ending in 4029 is currently holding $4 million in unallocated disaster relief funds. He explains that the routing number is already entered into the secondary field. He does not use my name, he uses the title director. He says the director needs to ensure the continuity of the mission. He says the mission requires a sacrifice. He picks up a silver pen from the desk and holds it out. The pen is heavy, it is balanced. The tip is retracted. He waits. I look at the smudge on the tablet. I look at the red numbers on the clock. 12:03. I'm staying, because if I don't, the foundation dies anyway. You have to understand how the math works in these circles. If the news breaks about what happened in 2018, about the discrepancy in the New Orleans audit, the legacy isn't just tarnished. It's erased. Every park, every scholarship, every wing of every hospital with my family name on it becomes a crime scene. By taking this money now, I am technically committing a crime to save 1,000 good deeds. It's a net positive. It's a survival tactic. If I leave this room without hitting that button, I am a martyr for a truth that helps no one. If I stay, I am a thief who keeps the lights on for the people who actually need the help. I am choosing the greater good. That's what a leader does. He moves his hand from the back of my chair to the top of the tablet. His thumb rests right next to the biometric scanner. He says that the endorsement gala is scheduled for Thursday. He mentions that the guest list includes the governor and the head of the national committee. He says my name would look very natural on a ballot. He says the audit issue from 2018 has been moved to a secure server that only he can access. He describes the server as a vault. He says he is the only one with the combination. He taps the screen of the tablet. The display wakes up. The blue light fills the space between us. It reflects off his white teeth. The authorize button is glowing. The smudge on the glass sits directly over the center of the blue icon. The transfer is for $2 million. It is labeled as logistics and infrastructure. The destination is a shell company based in Delaware. The shell company is owned by a trust. The trust is managed by his brother-in-law. This is not hidden. It is buried under layers of legal paper that will take a forensic accountant 3 years to untangle. By then, the election will be over. By then, I will be in the Senate. I look at the gold signet ring on his hand. It has a crest, a lion holding a sword. The lion's eyes are small rubies. They catch the blue light of the tablet. He asks if I remember the first time I met him. I was 24. He was the keynote speaker at my father's funeral. He spoke for 20 minutes about integrity. He spoke about the weight of a name. He's speaking now about the weight of a name. He says a name is like an anchor. It keeps you steady in a storm, but if the water gets too high, it's the thing that pulls you under. He says he is offering to cut the rope. He says the $2 million is the cost of the knife. The air in the room feels thicker now. The ventilation system hums a low B flat. I can hear the clock ticking, even though it's digital. It's a phantom sound. My finger is an inch away from the glass. I can feel the static electricity between my skin and the screen. He doesn't move. He doesn't breathe. He is a statue of charcoal and peppermint. He says that once the button is pressed, the 2018 files will be deleted. He says it's a fair trade, one ghost for another. I am doing this for the kids in the program. If the foundation folds, 400 seniors lose their housing. That's the reality. You're sitting there thinking you'd walk out. You'd go to the police, you'd be the hero. But who does that help? The police don't provide housing. The truth doesn't pay for chemotherapy. If I have to be the villain in a story no one ever reads, so that 400 people can sleep in a bed tonight, isn't that the most selfless thing I could do? I'm sacrificing my soul for their survival. It's a heavy price, but I'm the only one who can pay it. You wouldn't understand that kind of pressure. You've never had a name that meant something to anyone else. The biometric scanner flashes green. I didn't even realize I had moved my thumb. The screen shows a spinning circle, processing, the red numbers on the clock hit 12:10. The gold signet ring moves, he pulls his hand back, he stands up straight and walks back to his desk. He picks up his glass of water and takes a long, slow drink. The ice cubes clink against the crystal. The sound is final. He sets the glass down. It is no longer perfectly aligned with the grain of the wood. It is off by a fraction of an inch. He picks up a physical folder from his desk and tosses it toward me. It skids across the polished surface and stops at the edge. I open it. It isn't the 2018 audit. It's a series of photographs. They were taken 10 minutes ago. They show me sitting in this chair, holding the tablet, my thumb pressed firmly against the scanner. The angle is high, from the corner of the room. A security camera. I didn't notice. In the photos, he isn't in the frame. He was standing behind me. The photos show a woman alone in a dark room transferring $2 million of charity money into a private trust. He sits down and leans back in his leather chair. The leather creaks. He says that the endorsement is still on the table. He says he keeps his promises, but he also says that a senator needs to be reliable. He says that if I ever forget who helped me save the foundation, he might have to turn these photos over to the board to show them how dedicated I am to the mission. He smiles. It's a small, tight movement of the lips. He says he's glad we could clear the air. The smudge on the tablet is still there. I try to wipe it away with my sleeve, but it just smears. Now the whole bottom of the screen is a hazy grey blur. I look at my thumb. There is no ink on it. There is no mark. But it feels heavier than the rest of my hand. It feels like it's made of lead. The 2018 files weren't the leverage. They were the bait. He knew I'd protect the legacy. He knew I'd protect my father's name. He just needed me to provide him with something fresh, something he didn't have to dig for, something I handed him with a green light and a smile. He didn't rob the charity, I did. He just watched. He tells me I should go home and get some sleep. He says I have a big day on Thursday. He walks me to the door. He opens it for me. The hallway is brightly lit. The white fluorescent lights hurt my eyes. The carpet is a dull grey. He shakes my hand. His grip is firm. The signet ring presses into my palm. It leaves a small indented crest in my skin, a lion holding a sword. I walk to the elevator. The doors are brushed steel. I can see my reflection. I look the same. My hair is perfectly in place. My suit is unwrinkled. My name is still on the building across the street. But when the elevator starts to descend, I feel the floor drop away a little too fast. My stomach stays at the top. I'm still in control. I have the endorsement. I have the Senate seat. The money is gone, but the foundation stays open. I did what I had to do. The photos are just insurance. As long as I do my job, as long as I vote the way he needs me to vote, those photos stay in the vault. It's a partnership. That's how the world works. Everyone has a vault. Everyone has a price. I just paid mine up front. You think you're different? You think you're cleaner? You're just waiting for a politician with a nice enough suit to ask you to save the world. I reach my car in the parking garage. The air is cold here. It smells like exhaust and damp concrete. I sit in the driver's seat and look at the dashboard. 12:25. I look at my palm. The mark from the ring is already starting to fade. In another 10 minutes, you won't even be able to tell it was there. I put the car in gear. The headlights cut through the darkness, hitting the concrete wall. I think about the $4 million that was in that account. $2 million went to him. $2 million is left. I wonder how long it will take for him to need the rest. I wonder if he'll use the same photos or if he'll want a video next time. I wonder if I'll even hesitate. The smudge on the tablet in my bag is still there. I can feel it through the leather of the case. A small oily mark left by a person who thought she was making a choice. I drive out of the garage and into the city. The lights of the skyline are beautiful. They look like diamonds scattered on a black cloth. My father always said this city belongs to the people who are brave enough to take it. He just never mentioned that when you take it, you have to leave pieces of yourself behind to pay for the lease. I stop at a red light. A man is sleeping on a bench under a bus shelter. He's wrapped in a thin blue blanket. He looks cold. I think about the $2 million. I think about how many blankets that could buy. Then I think about the Senate seat. I think about the power to change the laws that keep him on that bench. Isn't that worth a little bit of theft? Isn't that worth a compromise, soul? The light turns green. I press the accelerator. The car moves forward, smooth and silent. I'm a good person. I know I am. I'm the director of a foundation. I'm a future senator. I'm a savior. The fact that I'm also a thief is just a technicality, a detail, like the smudge on the glass. If you don't look at it from the right angle, you can't even see it. You're judging me right now. I can hear it in the way you're breathing. You think you'd have walked away. You think you'd have let the 2018 files go public and watched the foundation burn. You think your integrity is worth more than the lives of the people I'm protecting? But you're wrong. You're just lucky. You're lucky no one has ever put your legacy in a room with a 68-degree thermostat and asked you what it's worth. You'd have done the same for half the price, wouldn't you?